Hi, morning, everyone. A happy Sabbath. And let me say Happy New Year to those I haven't had a chance to meet since 2019. Isn't it wonderful? We have a new year. And I was reflecting on that. It's 2020, isn't it? End of a year, end of a decade, some have been saying. But 2020, it's got a ring to it, hasn't it? And what it put me in mind of is that we will never see this year again. Once it's gone, it's gone. Each year is unique. Each year something special happens in your life. Each year something will happen to move you forward. And this year got me to thinking about 2020 vision. Now, any ideas about what 2020 vision is? Pardon? Good eyesight, yes, which I haven't got, as you can see. You know, you get to an age where you have to start donning the glasses. It happens to some people sooner than others, but yeah. 2020 vision, we think about people who have got perfect eyesight, don't we? Perfect vision. So they're not too short-sighted, they're not too long-sighted, they have good vision and they don't need glasses. Now, in the Bible, having vision is always, always a good thing, isn't it? Isn't that true? The Bible says, without a vision, the people perish. We all know that very well. And Jesus himself said, can a blind person guide a blind person? Will not both fall into a pit? And I don't think here that Jesus was talking about somebody being literally blind. He was talking about people who were spiritually blind. It's important that we have spiritual eyesight. And I think about, what about those people who are unfortunate to end up in a religious cult? Isn't that because of spiritual blindness? Or what about those who plod through life with no goals, no vision for their life? Isn't that also a kind of spiritual blindness? So having 2020 vision, spiritual vision, is really important. Because if you can't see where you're going, that's not cool. And if you're allowing your life to be led by someone who is spiritually blind, that's just downright dangerous. But isn't it amazing that so many people will follow the lead of others who clearly don't know where they're headed in life? It's important that we have spiritual eyesight for ourselves. I recently came across a story about a little girl called Terry who was very short-sighted. So this is back in the day, and she had really bad eyesight. So she could barely see the scores, you know, on the football match. She could barely see them. And she had to sit right at the front of the classroom because she could barely see the chalk writing on the blackboard. And when people hollered out her name down the school corridors, she couldn't see who it was, so she just used to wave enthusiastically at anybody. And it's not surprising that she ended up being voted the most popular girl in the school. Would you believe? And the reason she was going through all of this was because she did not want to wear glasses like these ones. Because glasses back then in 1985 were not cool. Does anybody remember what the glasses were like back then? They were thick, weren't they? They weren't that cool and doody like these ones. They were thick glasses. So she felt they looked more like Coke bottle glasses, and she didn't want to wear them. However, one day, her weak eyesight was found out. They had this thing where they was going to do eyesight in school, so the teacher got everyone to line up, and everyone had to go to the machine and read out the letters that they could see. And she thought, oh no, I'm going to be found out, you know, there's no way I'm going to be able to do it. But then she thought, you know what, hang on. If I just memorize the letters that the person before me says, I'll be cool. I'll be home free. So the girl in front of us came out with some letters. She said, LMZPTW. So she thought, yeah, let me memorize that. LMZPTW. And when it was her turn, she looked into the machine. She couldn't see a thing, of course. But she confidently said, LMT. Oh, I'm getting it wrong myself. LMZPTW. Shows I'm not good at memorizing, isn't it? So simple. She did it. But the teacher looked confused. Are you okay, honey? Yes, miss, Terry said. Then the teacher asked, could you please read the letters again? So Terry read again. L-M-Z-P-T-W. Got it. Terry, the teacher said, I think you're going to have your eyes tested professionally. Because what Terry didn't realize was that between every young person, the teacher would change the screens. So she was totally wrong. Her secret was out, and she got F for that test. But that was no bad thing. The opticians gave us some corrective lenses. But what's really interesting about this was that when she was driving on the way home, when her parents were driving her home, she was able to see the trees for the first time in clarity. She could see the leaves, and they weren't just a green blur. She could see the traffic signs, and they weren't just shapes. She could actually see what was on the traffic signs. Wow. And she could actually see the people. She could see the clothes they were wearing. She could see the expressions that they had. She could see. But how many of us are like that young girl, having no spiritual vision and yet not wanting to take corrective action? We can only see what's immediately in front of us. The shopping, the chores, the homework, the going to school, the going to work, and coming back and crashing in front of the TV. We don't have any vision of our futures, what we can achieve, where we're going, how we're going to get there, what we want for our lives. If you want to go to another level, you have to be able to see the other level. Helen Keller, I'm sure you've heard of her, a woman who was both blind and deaf, expresses this beautifully. She said, the only thing worse than being blind is having sight and no vision. In other words, it's better to be physically blind than have no vision for your future. So I'm tempted to ask, how many people here feel that they've got a vision for their future, they've got goals that you'd want to aspire to? I'm tempted to ask you to put your hand up, but I'm not going to do that. Only to say, have you got a vision for your future? It doesn't matter how young, it doesn't matter how old you are. Do you have a vision for the next 5 years of your life? Because we need to make sure that we are not like those people who have sight but no vision. Let me ask you then, do you know what makes you look forward to getting up in the morning? Where do you envision ending up in your life? Because everyone ends up somewhere in their life, but only a few people end up where they intended. Those few are the ones with foresight and vision. They're the ones that do not look back at their life with regret. They have a clear vision and the courage to follow it through. That's what enables you to look back at your life with a deep sense of satisfaction. That's what makes a milestone birthday something to look forward to, rather than something to dread. Vision also enables the humdrum, ordinary activities and events in our lives to become something exciting and meaningful. Vision is a difference between just laying the bricks and creating an architectural masterpiece. It's a difference between doing household chores and nurturing your family. When it comes to discovering your God-ordained vision, Nehemiah has to be one of my favorite books. But let me start by saying that God has a vision for each and every one of us. Jeremiah 29:11, one of my favorite verses, says, for I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord, plans for your welfare and not for hate, for harm, to give you a future with hope. To have a plan, you must first have a vision. So if God says he has a plan for you, it means that he already has a vision for each and every one of you. You just need to discover it. Andy Stanley, one of my favorite authors, says, visions are born in the soul of the man or woman or young person who is consumed with the tension between what is and what could be. I love this quote. Let me read it again. Visions are born in the soul of the man or woman who is consumed with the tension between what is and what should be. Why? Because visions tend to form in the hearts of those who are dissatisfied with the status quo. Jada Marshall, the little girl, she was dissatisfied with the status quo. The little boy, Lincoln, he was dissatisfied with the status quo. So to the person who feels frustrated, brokenhearted, or even angry, it could be that you're in the very place that God wants you to be in order to birth a vision. It's profound to think about how many charities and trusts have started out of the ashes of a painful experience. For example, the Starlight Children's Foundation was founded by Emma Sams, an actor who was impacted by her brother's death at the age of 8. So she set up the foundation, and the foundation offers entertainment and education and technology and has made a difference in the lives of over 60 million children. But if Emma hadn't experienced tragedy in losing her brother, perhaps the foundation might not have existed. In Nehemiah chapter 1, we learn that Nehemiah was in Susa, the capital, when one of his brothers came with men from Judah. And Nehemiah asked them about how the Jews were doing who had taken the opportunity to leave their captivity and return home. But Nehemiah didn't receive the good news he was hoping for, because they replied, "The survivors are in a bad way. They are in great trouble and shame, because the wall of Jericho, of Jerusalem, is broken down and its gates have been destroyed by fire." Nehemiah wept when he heard the news. A God-ordained vision tends to begin with concern. But unlike many other concerns that quickly pass away, a God-ordained vision will never let you go. Nehemiah was deeply concerned, so much he cried. And it made me think, how many times do we tend to read about a heartbreaking story of people suffering, whether it's from human trafficking, whether slavery or starvation or want, and you sigh and you feel sorry and you may even shed a tear, but then you move on. But a God-created vision will stay with you. When Nehemiah heard that the walls of the city were broken down and the gates were destroyed by fire, he understood that the people were vulnerable, embarrassed, and ashamed. Because in those days, the city wall represented security, it represented safety and status. His concern was so deep that even many months later, he still had a burden for his people. A God-ordained vision starts with a burden, and it may even cause you to have sleepless nights. So how do you know that God is birthing a vision in you? Well, if you have a concern, pray about it. If it's from God, it will deepen. If it's not, it will fade away. I remember when I was working in the career service, my vision was to help children, to help students raise their aspirations. I was a community careers advisor working with minority ethnic communities, and I knew that many students were not achieving all they could academically. I had just finished a language survey across the whole of Sheffield in the secondary schools, and during the research, many of those children were feeding back, or young people were feeding back, "The children, the teachers just do not believe in us." And it demoralized them, because it undermined their confidence. And from that feedback, I developed a deep concern. And I came away with a determination to do something about it. Why? Because I'd observed this indifference and lack of belief in some of the careers advisors and teachers that I worked with. I always remember one teacher in one particular school coming up to me and saying to me, "Discourage that girl from going on to study medicine. She's over-aspiring," he said. "She's trying to reach too high," he said. But I said in my heart, I will never say anything like that to someone. Instead, I went back to that young woman, as I said to her, "Hold on to your dreams. Don't give up. Keep going forward. Don't let nothing get in your way." And I can tell you, the joy I felt when a few months later I received a note, and it said that she had managed to get into Oxford to study medicine. And I was just celebrating, and the joy of that moment is still with me because she did not let go of her dreams. She did not let go of her vision. She did not let go. She kept going forward and she moved on. But it just said to me, I needed to do something. So I decided I was going to get together a motivational conference for these young people so that they could know that they too could be successful. A God-ordained vision means that you will be passionate about finding a solution. So if we look back to the book of Nehemiah and chapter 2, verse 1, we read that Nehemiah, in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was served him, I carried the wine and gave it to the king. Now, I had never been sad in his presence before, so the king said to me, why is your face sad since you are not sick? This can only be sadness of heart. Then I was very much afraid. I said to the king, may the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad when the city, the place of my ancestors' graves, lies waste and its gates have been destroyed by fire? You know, a God-ordained vision will also cause you to be passionate about your concern. You'll be so passionate, you'll be prepared to take risks for your vision. Now, Nehemiah was a cupbearer to the king of Persia, King Artaxerxes. In that kind of position, you have to be careful, even what facial expressions you allow yourself to wear. Servants knew that if they appeared sad or anxious or overly interested, the king might suspect betrayal and have them removed or even killed. So for Nehemiah, in such a position of trust to show sadness, was to take a huge risk. But he did it anyway. So what risks are you prepared to take to give birth to your vision? Is it a new career where you're prepared to go back to university? Is it that you want to be in a relationship but you know you have to be prepared to be vulnerable and show your feelings? Is it a dream to emigrate? Not that I'm encouraging anybody to leave this church, don't get me wrong. But is your dream to have a fresh start in another country? Do you want to start a new ministry to reach people? Or is it simply that you're scared of the risk of failure? What are you passionate about? For me, with that conference, I knew that my managers were not really interested in it. They were indifferent. But I took the risk anyway. It was more than what I was employed to do, but I did it anyway. So I went out to network with other people, other partners, other organisations, raised money before I even went to the managers to say, we can do this. I've got the money, the funding for it. I've got the venue. I've got the accommodation. I've got the green light. Can I go forward with this? I love the story of Bill Hybels. I don't know how many know Bill Hybels, but he was a pastor in the States. And as a young person, he was all set to follow his father to become a successful entrepreneur. But when a lecturer in his college challenged the class about having an Acts 2-based church, Hybels was so captivated by the image, by the vision of this, that he abandoned his business aspirations and decided to go into ministry instead. He wanted to do things differently. He wanted to have a church that was relevant to the community. So he and other leaders surveyed the community to see why people were not coming to church. Common answers came back like, church is boring. I know some of our young people think that as well. Church is boring, or they're always asking for money, or somebody even said, I don't like being preached down to. And rather than dismiss these responses, Hybel and others used them to shape a new approach to church ministry. Was it risky? For sure. Very few people had tried this approach. And Hybels, he could have just stayed within the family business, coasted along in his comfort zone, being very comfortably well off with lots of finance, but he didn't. He decided to step out in faith. And the rent and costs they raised by selling tomatoes, would you believe, door to door. And in 2 years, the church had over 2,000 people attending. And in 2017, the church averages 25,000 attendees each week, which is amazing. What God won't do for us and through us when we're prepared to step out in faith. So going back to the text, I'm just going to read from Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 4. Then the king said to me, "What do you request?" So I prayed to the king, the God of heaven. Then I said to the king, "If it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor with you, I ask that you send me to Judah, to the city of my ancestors' graves, so that I may rebuild it." The king said to me, the queen was also sitting beside him, "How long will you be gone, and when will you return?" So it pleased the king to send me, and I sent him a date. A God-ordained vision needs to be prayed over and needs preparing before it's shared. Nehemiah had been praying and fasting for many months before that meeting with the king, not just in the moment. But not only that, Nehemiah had been developing a strategy. He had worked out in his mind what resources he'd need, where he could get them, what support he needed, and what action he needed to take, so that when the king asked him that key question, "What do you need?" he was prepared. He was already there. So for us, the question is, have we prepared our vision? Have we done our research? Do we know how much demand there is for the product you want to bring to market? Do we know how much demand for the new occupation that you're thinking of entering? Can you get funding and support for the ministry you want to get started? It's not enough to just pray and fast. Though praying and fasting is essential, we also need to pray and act. We have to pray and step out in faith. A God-ordained vision, therefore, will exceed your expectations. It will be beyond anything you could hope, dream, or imagine. And you will know that God is working behind the scenes. And so it was for Nehemiah. From the king's willingness to help, there was this sense that Nehemiah was a much trusted and valued servant. But it would have been so easy for the king to just turn around and say, "You're valued, you're not going anywhere." But instead, God was working on his heart, such that Nehemiah, when he asked for help, the king was ready to let him go. Amazing. So what about my vision to raise aspirations? Was it a God-ordained vision? For sure. God came that we might have life and life more abundant. It is his will that we fulfill all our potential academically, spiritually, physically. So after much planning and organization, the conference was up and running. Students came from all over Sheffield and had an amazing time. They met successful role models who encouraged them and gave them tips and strategies for achieving their goals. They were all able to meet with other students and teachers who had had their similar experience and could relate to it. And I could never forget that in the middle of that conference, when everyone was sat round in a big circle, somebody, a man we'd never met, came walking in and stood right in the middle of the hall. And because he was dressed in this desert military garb, we was like shocked, and there was just this silence that filled the whole area. And then he said, "This conference is amazing. I wish that I had something like that in my day, else I might not be where I am today if it had been that I had had something like that in the past." And when that happened, the young people just erupted and cheered and celebrated and had such a good time. And we knew then that the conference was a big success. A few months later, the head teachers across the secondary schools met with the community and said that all the students that had attended that conference had came back to the schools with such a light in their eyes and with such a motivation to succeed that as a result, all those students achieved far more than any of the teachers had ever expected. God can do amazing things for us, in us, and through us. So let me ask, what is your vision for 2020? Make sure that you have a vision for your life. If you don't have one, maybe I'm speaking more to the young people here. If you don't have one, get one. If you've got one, what action plan are you going to put together to make sure it happens. So discover your vision. Write it, draw it, put it somewhere where you can see it every day and pray for its fruition. Be the person that God is calling you to be. Make it happen. Have 2020 vision for this year of 2020. Amen.